Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another deep discussion with people involved in independent music. If this is your first time here, welcome. There's a seat in back. You know, as the class progresses, you can obviously move closer to the front if you feel comfortable. But that's what we do here. We talk about punk, hardcore, indie rock. If you are thinking about small and sweaty rooms, that is exactly what we're talking about and why. We still care about it so much because, I mean, you can be young, you can be old, I don't care. If you're attracted to it and you follow it along throughout most of your life, that is what we're welcoming here at the podcast. Anyways, I extremely appreciate you consuming this show and continuing to support it because I've been receiving a lot of positive feedback in regards to publishing these episodes on YouTube and just, I don't know, kind of putting the show out there maybe more publicly or widely. I'm not exactly sure the way I can describe it, but regardless, thank you very much for listening and consuming to the podcast in general. We have a great guest this week. His name is Ryan Osterman. He plays guitar and sings in Holy Fawn, which those of you that are keeping track, that was my favorite record of last year called Dimensional Bleed. I freaking love that record. I actually have to stop myself from listening to it too much because, you know, you burn yourself out when you listen to a record too many times. But Ryan and his bandmates created a record that it stuck with me and it still continues to stick with me. So I'd have him on the show and I was able to time it to where I was able to release that list and the top 10 episode that, you know, we always do at the end of every year and then be able to have him on. It worked perfectly. And then I also saw him like maybe about 2 weeks after I recorded this interview with him because he was playing with Thrice and his band. And so it was really cool to be able to be like, yo, I'm that random stranger you talk to on your computer. And now you know what I look like. So that way, it's full circle stuff here. Anyways, let's talk about some other things. First of all, I was sick when I recorded this interview, so I'm a little more stuffy, nasally, sort of not out of it per se, but I just was very in my head as far as my sickness was concerned. So if you hear a distinct difference between the voice, that is why. So you're not just like, are you okay, Ray? Just want to make sure you're aware of that. You can always email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I accept any and all submissions, ideas, it's nice to be able to hear from you, the listener. I just always appreciate that. And honestly, developed a lot of friendships through that. People who I like literally go see movies with. And I'm not even joking because that definitely has happened. But You can also please just take like 15 seconds out of your day. And if you're listening to this on Apple Podcast, toss a star review on there. Or if you're listening to it on Spotify, you can do the same thing. Helps the algorithm and recommendations to your friends and all that sort of stuff. So I would appreciate that. And like I said, you can follow along on YouTube. I publish these interviews on there. It's a relatively new thing that I have been doing, but you can consume that way. And a lot of people who, I'll give you the very specific instance which people consume podcasts on YouTube. I mean, it's a whole thing, obviously, but people are like, yeah, you know, I can't listen to my, you know, normal stuff on my phone because like I'm at work and that's, you know, not blocked by a firewall, whatever the case may be. So you can subscribe to it. You can click on a link in the show notes. It's a very easy thing for you to do and subscribe. I would appreciate that because I'm trying to get to, you know, up to 1,000 subscribers because I know it's funny. You probably think that number and you're like, 1,000 sounds very nice and round. That's because at that point, that is when you can turn on monetization. I give you a little, behind the scenes look at why people say 1,000 subscribers, because then that all of a sudden is able to open you up to some revenue opportunities. So don't let anybody tell you anything different. Anybody that's like, oh, I'm just doing that as a random number. It's not a random number, everybody. Anyways, please do those things. And there, like I said, there is a link in the show notes. You can do that and I would appreciate it. Let's just dive into the conversation with Ryan. We talked a lot about just living in the desert. Because the band is from Phoenix, and clearly that has a lot to do with the music that they create. And I just love the band. So this is what we got with Ryan from Holy Fawn.
First trip across Holy Fawn via Death Spells, and honestly, I can't recall exactly whether it was a friend that shared it to me or I just found it on my own, but it elicited a reaction that I honestly hadn't felt in a long time, where I just wanted to reach out to you guys and just say like, hey, I really like your band. And like, it was one of those things where it's like, I'm fairly certain I either emailed or hit you guys up on Instagram with no other reason other than just be like, oh my God, I love your music. And I just think you're incredible at what you do.
Well, dude, I mean, thank you so much. I'm happy that you enjoy it. Like
that's why you do it, obviously. But I have a feeling that my reaction is not too dissimilar to other people who, you know, listen to your band. Because I think the thing about what you guys do is that, like, you inspire reaction. Whether or not a person is like, yo, this is the worst thing I've ever heard, why are your songs like 7 minutes long? Or like me, where it's like, oh my gosh, I identify with what you guys have going on. So I'm going to guess that's kind of the, not like people are going up to you and saying they're hating your band, but you get the point.
Yeah, I'm happy because we do have a lot of people that reach out to us with everything from just like, hey, that was a cool meme, or like, hey, I really like your album or song or something like that, and makes me happy that it's like that happens and that we're approachable enough for people to feel comfortable to reach out and say hey, just because we've had some people be like, hey, I'm in like the hospital and like your music's helping me get through like my chemo treatments and stuff. And I'm just like, holy, can I cuss on here? By the way, I should have asked that.
Absolutely.
Before.
No, let it fly.
But when you read that kind of stuff, your brain just kind of like explodes. Cause you know, I've said it, you know, times before, like when we were recording Death Spells, it took like 3 years for us to, from going from like some demos to actually like writing and recording it and re-recording it and all that stuff. So after like 2 or 3 years of doing that, we're just like, holy shit, it's done. Wow. Now it's done. Like, what if no one even gives a shit about it? You know,
sure.
So having those kind of responses and everything like that is just incredible to me. That's reached people in at all, and that it's providing some sort of comfort or solace or something like that. It's really amazing.
Yeah. And I think the point of me bringing that up is because there are certain, there are bands, and with art in general, you know, the worst type of art is the one that just kind of like sits solely in the middle. Like people are like, yeah, it's not bad or whatever, but it's not inspiring. Like you said, the reactions of people reaching out to you and expressing their love for whatever it is that you're putting out there. And I think that that's, especially with how far you guys push yourselves, like, you know, it's not, you know, an easy hang. Like, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but it has that built in kind of, oh, hey, you like songs with like verses and choruses? Like, we have them. You just have to wait a little bit longer for that.
Yeah. Or there's only like one verse and one chorus. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like sometimes we do have like parts that, you know, we come back to, like, it could, you know, constitute a verse or a chorus and stuff. But I feel like with a lot of stuff, I feel like it's more natural for me to just be like, okay, here's part A, part B, C, D, E, F, whatever. You know, like, and it just kind of like exists in like how it's supposed to, I guess, in like my brain. You know, like we have a song on the new album, Dimensional Bleed, like the title track on there is like only 2 minutes long, you know? So it's just like, it's just part A and part B and the song's done, you know? So it's just kind of fun to just do that. I don't know. I don't know why that feels more natural, but.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you're following the way that you want to create that stuff. And I mean, I do think there is that fun element of playing in a band or doing something creative where you revel in the idea of subverting expectations, where it's like, I know you expect this part next, but we're not going to do it. And not just to be a dick, but just like, you know, to be like, hey, like we're going to do this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know some people are probably just like, okay, this is like a Holy Fawn song. It's going to start off like kind of chill and quiet, and then it's going to be a big ending and shit. And sometimes I'm just like, dude, we gotta do something like different, you know? And sometimes it's like, you know, maybe like Evan or Alex will suggest, be like, hey, like, can we not just do like a big ending right here? Can we do something else? And I'm just like, you know, that's actually like a good idea to
right
kind of go a different route, you know? So what might feel really natural to me in a song might not be the best fit. And that's why we got those, you know, other brains in there in that creative space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll pull that apart a little bit as we go into the conversation, but I wanted to focus on you as an individual. I know you were born and raised in Arizona. I didn't actually find out on doing my, you know, deep sleuthing on the internet, what city you were actually born and raised in Arizona, or am I off?
So I was actually born in New York.
Okay.
But I've lived in I've kind of been all over the place, you know, but sure. Arizona's kind of been headquarters for the majority of my life. But yeah, even in Arizona, I've lived kind of all over the place. Like, I mean, Phoenix as like a whole is really kind of just spread out a lot, you know? So, you know, you have like Mesa and Tempe. I live in like central Phoenix right now, which is really cool because I'm only like, you know, 5 minutes from like downtown proper. And then, you know, I'm pretty close to like, you know, of like the 51, just like a freeway that kind of takes you wherever else you need to go.
Sure.
But yeah, Phoenix has kind of been headquarters. I think Alex is the one that was born and raised in Arizona.
Okay, got it. So at what age did you, I guess, land in Arizona proper?
Let's see. Probably when I was like, I must have been like 3 or 4. We moved when I was a really little kid.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's weird. I don't know. Arizona is always like, I hate the summers because I hate the sun and I hate the heat. And so it's like the worst place to be.
Yeah, bad combo, right?
8 months of summertime here, it feels like. It's just always kind of like been home. You know, I lived here. Then my family moved us to like the UK for a couple of years. Then back here, San Fran, Ohio. But it's always like here. That's like, I don't know. It's like my little headquarters, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting because usually people experience these. I mean, there's always that, especially once you start to gravitate towards subcultures, the idea of like getting out of your city and experiencing the world and, you know, the limitations that exist of your own hometown. But it's funny that you had those traveling experiences based on your family moving around, and you're just like, yeah, Arizona's pretty sick.
Yeah. I mean, it's really nice. I mean, like I do feel comfy here, but you know, we tour a lot out of the year. So, I do get kind of like out of my habitat for a good portion of the year, you know, and like, you know, when you're, I mean, like oftentimes it's just like, you know, we'll be out for like weeks and only have like a couple, you know, days off over the course of the whole thing. So you kind of do really get to see a lot, you know, when you're like out there. So that kind of, you know, satiates that wanderlust, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like you said, most of your formative years were spent in Arizona. What was your, I guess, family structure like as you were growing up and kind of moving to these different places? Like, was it, you know, mom and dad, like brothers and sisters? What did that look like?
Yeah, I have a younger brother. He's 2 years younger than me. My parents split when I was like 12 or 13 or something like that. But like our first place in Arizona was like out at the end of this like pretty long stretch of road. They're starting to do like housing developments and stuff. But so we moved out there, and it's like the middle of the desert though. Like at nighttime, like you hear like just the wind, coyotes, like just like nature and everything. So like even as a kid, it's like you just kind of like, what do? You like skateboard out to like where the like road ends, or like at the end of the park and stuff like that, and just go like wander around the mountains and look for rocks and stuff.
Sure. So
it was really cool. Like as I got older and everything like that, I started living in like Tempe, which is like another kind of like city in like the Phoenix area. It's like more of like a college town. So that's kind of like where I like lived and worked and everything. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like family life was always like pretty normal. I mean, like I say normal, it's like my, you know, parents are divorced, but I feel like everyone's parents are divorced. So
yeah,
I didn't really, like, it wasn't like really a huge surprise to like me or like my brother. It was just kind of like, oh, okay. So now we're just going back and forth between houses or something like that occasionally. So
sure. Did you, just because you and your brother were so close in age, like, did you guys have that bond, or were you guys kind of going on your own paths?
Yeah, it's really weird. So we, as really little kids, I know we got along, but as we started to get into like the teenage years, we were just like always fighting and stuff like that.
Sure.
Like I saw this meme the other day, and it was like, with like, which one were you, like the one who had the knife, or the which one, or were you the one that was running from the knife? And I had like send that to my brother, because like our fights got like out of hand and shit like that. Like my brother would like he's littler than me, but like he would be like doing crazy shit like that. So I thought that was funny, but
right.
Yeah, so eventually just evolved into like this weird like apathetic kind of relationship, you know? Like we lived in the same house, our rooms are right next to each other, but we just like wouldn't talk for like weeks, you know? And I remember I moved out when I was like 17, I think. My dad got remarried and moved to San Francisco, and he like couldn't sell his house in time or something like that. So I just moved into his house, which was like 30 minutes away or 40 minutes away. So I had this like house to myself as like a like 17, 18 year old. I started having like some friends over, because I was just like, I don't think I had like my first drink or like smoked pot or anything like that until I was like 18 or something like that. And anyways, I was like, okay, this is pretty fun, having friends over, getting drunk, and
well, dude, yeah, you, I mean, that's
you're a teenager, you know, so
right. I was just gonna say, not to interrupt, but like that, I mean, that is a very unconventional experience of like not only having a house in which you can, you know, host friends, but then like have that, you know, unencumbered experience where you're just like, oh yeah, you guys want to come over and hang out? And like, yeah, no one's gonna care if we obviously do whatever it is that we're doing. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, it was just like, oh cool, you like, you want to just like eat mushrooms and like drink and shit and blah blah. So anyways, I had some friends over one time, and I, you know, was like, you know what, I should like, because like when I was in high school, I didn't really like do anything, you know. I played music, I kind of skated and stuff. My brother, on the other hand, he was like really big into like smoking pot and everything and like kind of like drinking. And so I was like, wow, like now that I kind of do this stuff, maybe I should invite my brother. And it's weird, but like we ended up being like really, we're like, I mean, we're best friends now, you know, we live like probably 5-10 minutes from each other. But yeah, it, like we really bonded in those years to, you know, having friends and music all around us and stuff. So
yeah, that's really cool.
It was a weird character arc, I think, for both of us. But I'm really glad though, because like I said, I mean, he's my best friend. So I'm glad that, I mean, it sucks that us being delinquents was what brought us together. But hey, like we're young, so.
Yeah. Well, I just like that because at that point, you guys were viewing each other, obviously, as not the enemy, but you were viewing each other as humans. Like, because you get, I mean, the same thing can be said about your parents. Like, it's so earth shattering once you realize, like, oh, my parents have no clue what they're doing. And you're just like, they're like, once they become humans, that's when you can kind of like get along on an even deeper level. And so it's cool that you have that with your brother.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny. I think now that I'm like a little bit older and stuff, it's like just thinking about it, I was like, man, my mom got married when she was like 21, had me when she was like 23. And I'm like, I could not possibly fathom the thought of taking care of like two young little like boys and stuff, even at this age. I'm just like, no, thank you. Surprised that you survived.
Right. Totally. Yeah. That's also another full cycle moment where you can just be like, holy moly. I can't even like, I'm sorry for whatever we did. And like, just, you know, God bless. Like, thanks for ushering us along.
My mom is an absolute saint. Like we really didn't get along when I was a teenager at all. You know, that's like a big reason why I decided to leave when I was like, when I was as young as I was, you know? But it's just like, my mom was a single mom with two like angsty teenage boys. Like she was just doing her best and stuff, you know? And it's like, now we're really tight. Like my mom like called me up the other day and she was like, do you want to do mushrooms with me? And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like,
right. Sure. Yeah.
Like, hell yeah. But what? Wow. So that's just really funny. I'm just like, wow, my mom has a drug dealer. And like, this is the same mom that like smashed like my brother's bong. Like it's
right.
That's just goofy stuff, man.
Okay. Pop open your web browser. Go to rockabilia.com. Use this promo code 100 words or less. And it gets you 10% off of your entire order. Follow those steps and you will be able to unlock all of these amazing, let me just list a few of the bands that they offer exclusive merch for. Bring Me the Horizon, David Bowie, Avenged Sevenfold, Slayer, Queen. I don't care what band you are into, they undoubtedly have something for you there. It's all officially licensed, ships from the Midwest. I love this company because they got everything for everybody. You know, they're just going to solve all of your problems. If you're looking for a gift or you're looking for something for yourself and then being like, oh man, maybe I need to get my uncle or my aunt, you know, Led Zeppelin shirt or whatever. Boom. Rockabilia is solving all your problems. And I'm solving your problem by giving you a discount. 100 words or less, 10% off your order, rockabilia.com. And as always, thank you, Rockabilia, for your continued support of this show and music in general.
And so like you said, with, you know, school and kind of kid life in general, as you're developing your identity, you weren't, you know, like into sports. You, like you said, you were skating a little bit. I'm guessing independent music kind of started to filter its way into your life around that time. And like, how did you get exposed to that?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, definitely. I mean, I know my dad like shoved me and my brother into a lot of sports growing up, but like, man, I just never was good at it and never had any interest in it. I think I'm just like not a very athletic person.
Sure.
So yeah, music was like really, really like big for me. And man, I like it was at a time where it's like you kind of discover a lot of this music because like, maybe your friend has an older brother and they had like some like know-how and introduced them. So they burned you a CD and stuff, you know, like that's kind of how I found like everything. I remember like I had a friend. It was like one of the first guitar players for. Do you know that band Job for a Cowboy? They're like a death metal band.
Of course, JFAC. Yeah, yeah. No, I worked for about 10 years at Century Media, and at one point in the early 2000s, I actually distinctly remember driving out to Arizona before they signed to Metal Blade, trying to like convince them to sign with Century Media. So yeah. Anyway, continue.
No, yeah. So their first guitar player. His name's Andy, I believe. And I have no idea in this entire world, because I was playing some just like shitty teenage screamo band at the time. You know, it was like MySpace days and stuff. And I remember him messaging me and being like, hey, like, band's pretty cool. I'm just like, dude, like, you're in fucking JFAC. Like,
right.
On your radar, you know, like, because I mean, like, I used to see them at like this like one venue that had like, it must have been like an 80 cap like capacity or whatever.
Right. You think about the modified?
It was like, oh dude, it was basically the modified. Okay. That's crazy. Yeah.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it. Instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
So him just being like, cool with me. I was just like, wow, this is awesome. We got on the topic of just like music, and it was really funny because like when I would see them, he would always sound check with like Copeland's guitar riffs, and then their set is just like so fucking aggressive, you know? So I'm just like, wow, I think we have like maybe similar taste. And he introduced me to Elliot Smith and this other artist who's a German artist. I think they're in Sweden now, but the band's name was called Ariel Kill Him. And that like really, really like, resonated with me, like both of those artists really did. Yeah, so like I was starting to kind of get a lot of music from friends, because now you can make internet friends who have a lot of obviously different tastes and stuff. So it was a really cool time to kind of be in like a, you know, a teenager in those MySpace days, you know.
Yeah, I've thought about this because I've had many similar conversations to people you know, on this show. I do think that the ease to access to music, while there could totally be old heads that are just like, oh, you didn't have to work for it and read thanks list or whatever. It's stupid arguments, but well, it's not even an argument. But I really like the fact that you highlighted exactly what I think is so cool about it, where you could get into a wide array of music and not have it necessarily, you know, judge or whatever. You were consuming Job for a Cowboy and Copeland, you know, and Ariel. Like all of this was happening at the same time. And you were just going down that rabbit hole because no one was stopping you. And no one was like, oh, Ryan, that stuff's not cool to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I mean, it's awesome. And, you know, like I've always just really enjoyed just like exploring music of really kind of any kind. Like, when me and my brother were like really little kids, we used to go to this, like my family took us to this like awesome Mexican restaurant, and right next door was this, the restaurant, there was this record store that we'd go into, and I would just like flip through a bunch of just different CDs, and like, I would just buy CDs just based on like the album cover, you know? So I just got like random stuff, you know, like I think it got like a Rammstein album and like an Eve 6 album at like the same time or something, you know? And like, I don't know. I just, I've always been really interested in that. Like, I feel like even when I'm on Spotify, I'm always going on like Release Radar or my Discovery thing, just because like I constantly want to hear something kind of new, you know? So
yeah, it's cool. I do like that concept too of just, you know, you're just taking stabs in the dark, trying to understand like, oh, I like this because of the artwork or whatever. And like you said, you're drinking so much of it in that you couldn't, you know, you could never find a bottom to it.
Yeah. I mean, and you never know like what is going to resonate with you like so profoundly, you know, like one of my like favorite artists right now is this, this gal performs under, Art School Girlfriend. Like, I remember I found one song and I think I felt like I found the album it was on and I listened to nothing but that album for like, I think a week straight. Like, it was just so damn good. And it was like, I didn't even really, like, I know I liked kind of like a little bit poppier stuff, but this is like weird, gloomy pop with like kind of like dreamy, crispy production. And you just never know like what you're going to find. And it might be like something that like truly inspires the shit out of you. Cause I remember after that, I was like, one, I want to cover this song. Two, I want to figure out exactly how to get my electronic drums to sound just like those, you know? So it's just something I'd spent like a month on, you know, just being like, all right, I feel like if I get, you know, this drum sample, I can tweak it X, Y, Z and be inspired to write something completely new, you know? So
yeah, that's incredible.
It's a tool to like consume this stuff for me, I feel like.
Right, exactly. Just shove it all in and then see what comes out.
Yeah.
Did you, as you started to experience this and like you said, go to shows and see, you know, bands like right in front of your face, did you immediately get taken by the idea that you wanted to play in a band, or was that something you had to kind of warm up to?
Oh, I mean, like I always wanted to be in a band, like, or I always wanted to like be playing music. I remember being a kid, you know, like putting a CD on in my room and like, this sounds so dorky, but fuck it. Yeah. Literally like put a CD on in my room, turn it up and like jump on the bed and just like play air guitar and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And, like I really, 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 really wanted to like play guitar and just, I saw, you know, I had this babysitter when we were really little and she'd always have like MTV on and everything. So we're just watching music videos all the time. And I was like, that looks so freaking cool, man. Like, you know, like I think I started playing guitar when I was like 10 or 11. And, like, you know, I was about to start playing lefty too. Cause like I'm lefty. And we got to this music store and like, the guy there was just like, dude, like, the only thing that my family could like afford was this like 3/4 scale, which is probably perfect for me at the time because I'm not a very big person, but like not Jackson, but like their Squire version. I think it's like Memphis or something. Mm-hmm. But it was an electric guitar, and my dad, who finally agreed to let my mom like take me to go get a guitar, was like, only if it's an acoustic. But for some reason, like my mom was like, hell yeah, let's do the electric thing. So my mom definitely was kind of like a catalyst for that. Cause I just remember, picking that up and just being like, I want to learn every like Deftones song or like the Refused and shit like that. And, an acoustic guitar was not going to do that for me.
No. Yeah. You're not going to get that immediate feedback of like, oh, this sounds real different.
Yeah. I think my parents probably realized that it was a gigantic mistake to give like a young child an electric guitar and an amp though, who like can't play it, you know, cause like didn't have lessons quite at that point. So I think it took lessons for like 6 months after they realized how bad I was in my room.
Right.
Like, I don't think they had the heart to tell me to like stop or put headphones on or something.
Right. Or, I mean, I always, you know, bless the parents that go down the path of bringing drums in the house where it's just like, yeah, guitar and amps are, that's one thing. But then, you know, the drums, there literally is no volume monitor.
God, dude, no. Like, I honestly, whenever we're recording and stuff like that, I wish I could just, I like, sometimes I'm just like, okay, if we're just tracking drums, like, I'm just going to take the day off or something.
Sure.
I can't listen to drums this whole time.
Yeah, you're like, I'll take a pass on this day. Like, not because I don't like it, but just because it's too loud. I'm sorry.
Dude, hearing drums by themselves is like such, like, to me, such a non-musical sound. I love drums, and I wish I could play them, honestly, but by themselves, it just seems so like atonal to me.
Yeah.
Not sure every drummer that hears this is probably gonna be like, "Well, fuck this guy," but
yeah. No. I mean, you're in the same way that people, you know, can easily say where it's like, yes, on guitar or bass or whatever, like you were playing notes where, yes, there are notes on a drum, but it is a whole different ballgame there.
Yeah, I just don't have my ear tuned to do that. Like, I'm just like, oh, I can listen to a song or an album and be like, oh, this drum sound really fucking good. And know like what good drums sound like and what bad ones sound like. But yeah, I just can't do it on its own. But thankfully, like, so we like record everything ourselves. So if like Austin's recording, like Austin does a lot of, Evan and Austin do a lot of like the recording and everything. And usually it's just like, Austin will just go record drums like by himself, you know, because he's like, I'll just press record and hop on behind the kit and call it.
I'll just do the thing. No worries, guys. I got this.
I'm very, very thankful that he's both a good engineer and good drummer.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that I've observed just in the, playing in bands, traveling to Phoenix for many years myself, like Phoenix is such an interesting town where it's large enough as far as a city is concerned. But the music scene is so small but the city's big enough to support multiple venues. And like the scene, broadly speaking, from an independent perspective, is so incestuous where it's like, if you haven't, I mean, I know I was just going to make a joke where it's like, if you haven't played the main, did you even play in a band, like, you know, in Arizona? And I know you did as well, but I'm sure you kind of felt that as you were, you know, starting to experiment and playing in bands and stuff like that, that it seemed like everybody was kind of swapping band members and playing in different bands.
Yeah. I mean, especially with like the main, like I was in three different bands with those guys. Like,
it's amazing.
I mean, minus John, because he was like the, you know, he was just like a wild card for the rest of us. We're just like, who the fuck is this? Like,
totally. And yeah.
I love the guy to death. It's funny. Like, we're all playing music together for like years since we were like really young teenagers and stuff. And one day, like we kind of like, one of our bands fizzled out and we're just like, whatever. I'm just going to kind of like do my own thing. And I get a call from like Pat, the drummer's older brother, Tim. And he was like, hey, I've got like a friend who like can sing. We were like at a bonfire in California and he like, turns out he can sing. Do you guys want to make a band with him? And we're just like, sure, why not? So,
right.
That's how it happened. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, like the music scene in Phoenix now is like, I don't, it's hard to describe because I'm seeing a lot of bands do some like really, really like big stuff. Like, Sydney Sprague, I think I'm saying her last name properly. I fucking hope so.
Sure.
Is so awesome. I just remember like seeing, it's just so cool to see some of these bands where you see these tiny little like DIY flyers and now she's touring with like the Front Bottoms or something, you know?
Right.
So it seems small, but at the same time, there's a fucking lot going on and these bands are doing some like really cool stuff too. And even bands that I thought were like dormant for a while, just like bust out like a new EP and it fucking rules or something, you know? We have another band here. There's two bands actually that I really like here. One is a continent named Coma. It's like really cool, kind of like post-hardcore scramsy stuff. And same thing with this next band, Not Nearly. And I've done some like remixes and like vocal work for these guys, and like just really cool bands. And it's just great to see that like from Arizona, you know, because it's gone through like a lot of kind of weird waves, you know, like we had really strong like metal scene. I guess we still do. Then it was like very folky for a while and then kind of indie. And now it's like this weird combination of everything.
Yeah.
It's badass to see.
And it seems like, too, the idea that, you know, it takes a while for bands to, you know, break out in different ways that you would see that are located in LA or New York or whatever, the typical quote unquote places that, you know, bands originate from, where it's, I mean, yeah, you can look at the, you know, hometown heroes of Jimmy Eat World, and, you know, clearly it took them a long time to, you know, multiple records to hit the middle. And, yeah, and so, but yeah, you're very right, where it's just like it ebbs and flows. But I've just always thought Phoenix was really interesting because it was that small combined with big enough to support multiple venues, but then have so many people, you know, from a kid perspective, starting bands that all sounded so drastically different, but then also probably played with each other at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really badass. It's kind of interesting now, cause I think like the pandemic killed a lot of these like DIY locations. So it's like, now we kind of only really have like the really well-established venues, and a lot of these bands, like, you know, like, it's hard for them to probably get booked at some of these places just because the venues are watching out for their kind of bottom line. You know, they're like, want to book the show that's going to make them the most money. And you don't always get to like see these bands, you know? So it's kind of a little bit of a bummer, but it's, you know, it does ebb and flow. I mean, like, there's many times where we don't get a whole lot of like, kind of like DIY local spaces, and there's going to be times we have like four or five going on. So hopefully we're just in the valley right now, and we'll get some peaks too, just because I really like those kind of spots. You know, I mean, like, sound's not always great, but like, I don't know, like the energy of those locations and stuff is always such a fun time, you know?
Oh yeah. It's beautiful. I know that you, I mean, you've definitely mentioned this in almost every single interview of like how you got, you know, how the inspiration with Holy Fawn, as far as like you guys working at a guitar store, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to relitigate that story. I guess just based on, you know, what you have put out into the world as far as your own personality, like, you know, you're reserved. You're not like this, you know, person that's coming into a party and being like, oh, hey, everybody, look at me. Like, you know,
no, I'll die.
Right. Exactly. So I think that idea of like, you know, once you became friends with them and then once you invited them over to kind of have your first jam session, that probably took a lot of courage for you to do that. Like, do you, I guess, reflect on that first step of being like, hey guys, let's come over and jam? Or was that a relatively easy ask because it was in a comfortable environment?
I was hesitant at first. Like, they asked me a couple times, and I was just like, coming from like my own kind of solo project and everything that recently, like, it started off solo and then it turned full band, and then people either died or went to college or moved or something like that. So I was just like, you know, I just kind of feel like I work better on my own, and I think I'm gonna keep doing that. And so that's what I was doing. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, like, it's always awkward when you're like playing music with somebody for like the first time and it's all just improv, because it's just like, who's leading? Also, like, what if I fucking hate what you're doing? What if you hate what I'm doing? What if I'm not good enough to keep up with whatever you're doing? So there's a lot of like things going through my head. And also, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, I'm kind of a homebody. So the thought of just like leaving the creature comforts of my place and lugging all this gear to someone else's, I was just kind of like, eh, I don't know if I want to do this. But needless to say, when we all got together, it was perfect. It was like something where we literally lost track of like 3 hours, you know, and we were playing music the whole time. And I just remember being like super happy with like a collaboration for like the first time in I don't even know how many years, you know? So it was like, this is one of those feelings where you know that this is like gonna click, you know? So I was really, really thankful for that and for those guys for being like persistent enough to not like maybe just, they could have all just jammed on their own, you know? And I'm glad that they
kept like, pressing you, right?
I really am. I mean, like, this band would not be a thing if they didn't keep getting on me about it. So I'm really grateful for those guys.
Yeah. The like we were joking about before, like, you played in an early iteration of The Main. And, you know, what did you learn, I guess, from either that experience or as you started to kind of play local shows and, you know, have that in your background as you started Holy Fawn? Was there things that you kind of took over from those experiences?
So the main was like the first time that we actually had like a manager, like not like, Tim's brother, or I mean, sorry, Pat's brother, Tim is the manager for the main. I believe he still is. So it was interesting to have like some actual like guidance, you know, and he was just kind of starting out too. He wasn't like a pro in the industry, but he was really smart and he knew like a decent amount of people to kind of properly guide us. So we got to play some shows out of state and stuff like that before. Because, like, you know, I think I was, I don't know, like 16 or something like that at the time. Maybe I was a little bit older. I can't remember. But like doing that was like huge for me. I was like, holy shit. Like, am I actually a musician? Because
right.
We can play shows in our hometown and out of state or something. So that was really cool. It was interesting to see a more professional side of the industry at a young age. But I really wouldn't see anything like that till much later on down the line, you know, even in my like previous like project, the one that like more or less kind of like started Holy Fawn and everything. Like we toured, we did stuff, but it was always so like kind of like DIY and wouldn't like make any money, or I mean if we did it was just going straight back into like gas or to buy us food and stuff, so it was kind of just like touring for fun, I guess, you know. But
right, there was no future plans or momentum that you felt like you're building upon.
Yeah, I mean, like, I knew that like we were making music that we like I enjoyed, and I was lucky to have friends that enjoyed it enough to play with me for free. Sure. Like aside from like food and stuff like that. So I think it was like something was happening, but yeah, we still wouldn't like really see any semblance of like that professional world until like kind of after Death Spells and everything, because we're just like that record did so much better than any of us could have possibly ever thought of, you know, like
right.
Like people are still listening to it, and like that's amazing to me. So yeah, it's weird. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say like what I took from the main, because it was brief and I was really young. So I don't know. I feel like I've learned a lot more about like the industry and stuff like that with Holy Fawn, just because we've been doing it for so much longer, and because we have just like a killer team behind us too. That's so helpful with keeping, you know, the wheels moving and all that. But it's still always like a learning. It's still always like a learning curve. Like I feel like every tour we go on, I learn something a little bit different about that whole life, which is interesting. Some of them feel a little bit easier. Some of them feel a little bit more complicated. Like the last few months, we did our first like headlining tours and like here and in Europe, and
right.
Touring in Europe was like a completely different like can of worms, which was freaking awesome. But there were just like little random hurdles that we had to like kind of like figure out how to navigate, you know? So it's really cool though. I mean, like I enjoy touring and I enjoy learning something kind of new about how everything operates and how to make us all happy and function like a finely tuned machine, you know?
Let's talk about our friends at evilgreed.net. First of all, go to that website. You will unlock so many cool things for your eyeballs to look at and eventually order and wear. But use this promo code before you do anything else. 100 words is the promo code. It gives you 10% off your order. And you may be asking yourself, what is this company? They are a web store / merch store solutions provider for bands and labels and stuff like that. But more importantly, they offer you, the consumer, a very easy place to buy all of this merch. But the thing is they are very specific in the types of bands and labels that they work with. They honestly act as like a record label / curator, and I love them for it. Like they have bands like Sun, Nails, Power Trip. They also work with labels like Sgt. House and one of my favorite new bands, Brutus. They have a rad merch store there for them. And they also have like death metal, 200 Stab Wounds. Like who doesn't want a 200 Stab Wounds shirt? I mean, I don't because I'm not as tough as most of you, but you get the point. EvilGreed.net
10% off. They're based out of Berlin, Germany, but they ship to the US very, very fast. And honestly, the shipping is not expensive. I was actually shocked, and that's why they're advertising on this very show. They want you, the US-based consumer, to check out their website and order all of this stuff. Because like I said, they work like a record label, very specific curation they got going on there. So go to evilgreed.net, buy all of the stuff using the promo code 100words. Thank you very much.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
As you started to have to, you know, understand more of the business aspect, and it doesn't even have to be this, you know, grand gesture of business, but just like, oh, like how much should we charge for shirts, or how many shirts should we order? Like, wait, we got paid $100 for this show? Like, how did you, I guess, start to compartmentalize the business versus the art? Because I know that there are people in bands that are excited to take that on, and there's other people in bands that are like, dude, keep me far away from that, because I either suck at it or I have no interest in it.
I mean, it started off with me like designing like one t-shirt design. I found a company local that would print them for a decent enough price. And I was the one who, I put it all on our Bandcamp, you know, and you can do your like little merch store on there.
Sure.
And I would package and send out every merch order, be it like a vinyl, a CD, or like a t-shirt for the longest time. And I honestly really, really loved it. It felt so cool to be able to put like a personalized message in every single one, or do something like special. It's like, oh, I forgot that we had these like original sort of first gen stickers or like little buttons that we like made a long time ago. And I can throw that in there for free and like just surprise somebody, and hopefully like that makes their day, you know?
Right.
And it was very time consuming, but it was like really, really rewarding. But as soon as we started to get like kind of like a proper manager, our manager right now is the one who originally put out the album on his record label, Whelmed Records. And then when he moved into a management position, he started working with our label, and they kind of like started like outsourcing a lot of those roles to other people. So it was kind of nice, because it's nice to know that you have like a team kind of like taking care of that. So I can just focus on like working on music and stuff like that, or like managing like the socials and stuff.
Right. Like doing the things that you not only enjoy, but you know, you're maybe better equipped to do, rather than being like, oh, do I got to look at this contract that I like would have to take 6 months to learn just how to read the first page or whatever.
Yeah. Like I really enjoy like being able to like talk to like our listeners, and like if they're like going to message us on Instagram and everything like that. Like that was big. And cause like, I know what it's like to reach out to an artist that you really like and not hear anything back. And you're just like, man, I kind of like, and you, like, I'm not owed anything like by anyone. Just like, I just remember I've typed out messages and been like, dude, like your music genuinely made me not want to kill myself. Like, I just wanted to say thank you. Like,
right.
And you know, you'd like, don't really like hear anything back. And it's like, I'm not owed anything, but it would be like so cool if that was acknowledged, you know? And I always wanted to just do the like opposite. Like that was always kind of like my internal like commitment, was just like, ever want to respond to everything. I just want to like treat everyone like humans and stuff like that, and like continue to just like, we're still just a we're just four dorks just making music, you know, like not anything like cool or like super unique or anything. So I just wanted to be human with these people that took the time to one, listen to it, and if they connected to it, then I wanted to be able to at least recognize that, because I oftentimes never got that, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that is inherently rooted in the art that you create. Just the, it's not even self-deprecation, but it's just like, you have no illusions of grandeur. Like the creation of the art isn't meant to, you know, put you on some on some trajectory that will be like, all right, we're going to obviously be as big as Coldplay. Like, I mean, that's an exaggeration, but yeah, it's kind of hard baked into who you guys are, where it's like the people that get us, we want to like get them and meet them where they're at. But then also, just like you said, foster that relationship to where people are invested in you guys, you know, for the long term, and not just obviously dipping out on each record or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's happened like a couple of times we've been on tour and someone was just like, oh my God, dude, like you're in Holy Fawn. I'm just like, hey, yeah. Like, I promise. Like I'm just out here.
Yeah,
like
we're not that important. Yeah. I promise you. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's, I don't know. It's cool to just be like a real like person, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't happen very frequently, but sure. It's just like, it's interesting when that happens. I'm just like, I don't think that there's anything to geek out about over me at all. So
yeah,
but it's interesting to see how things have kind of evolved a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of touring, I know that that is something, I mean, you guys do spend a lot of time on the road, and I'm sure your relationship with touring has evolved to where, you know, when you first start to do it, like clearly it's a bunch of new experiences and you're playing a bunch of different cities you've never been to. But as, you know, that starts to get longer in the tooth, not to say that it becomes, you know, habitual, but it enters a different phase. So how have you interacted with that, knowing that you do probably have to have that, those moments of like, all right, guys, I'm just going to be by myself, so please don't talk to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, alone time is so infrequent, you know? There's, like, times where, like, we're in, like, a really cool city, and I just know it's going to be, like, better for my mental health. They're like, oh, we're going to go walk around. There's, like, cool, like, record store down here. We're going to go check it out. And I'm just usually, like, I'm just going to, like, lay on this couch and eat some like chips and hummus and try to just like take a nap or something, because I need to like recharge, because like I feel like I get like really overstimulated by like lots of noise or like a lot of people talking all at once, and it kind of just like makes me feel very paralyzed. And yeah, like so having those times where I can just like be by myself is like always really appreciated, but it's not always like that. And I think it's fun now because we've hit pretty much all of our normal like markets like several times, you know, so it's really cool when you get to, you know, we're like, oh, we're playing this city, oh yeah, like I forgot this venue has a fucking basketball hoop or something like that. It's so cool to like have like kind of like places that you can almost like, that's not, you don't like feel like home, but it's like familiar enough to where it's like
you can count on it, right?
Yeah, it feels like comfortable, you know. And there's a handful of venues that like when we played we're just like, man, that's like, I fucking love it here. Like it's so good, like they take so good care of us, or like there's an amazing vegan pizza spot like two doors down, like something like that, you know. It's kind of become like this really like fun thing. It's become a little less stressful, you know.
Because I think you can build in, yeah, you can build, to your point, you can build in a ritual around it where you have things to look forward to, as opposed to like the endless expanse of like, you know, 40 more tour dates or whatever in towns. And like, it's exciting to play the show, but as many people have illustrated before, it's a whole lot of waiting around.
Yeah. And so it's, yeah, it's just cool to have some sort of like familiarity and stuff like that. I mean, like we don't usually always hit the same venues, but like sometimes when it does happen, it's really cool. And it's also, for me, it's been interesting to be like, oh, we've played, you know, I think we played we have played out a sold out show at St. Vitus in Brooklyn on this last run. And it was insane to me, just because, like, I just remember the first time we played there, we opened for a tour with Oh Brother, and by the time we were there, I mean, like, you could very much see the ground. Like, there was not a lot of people there for
us.
Yeah,
there was some space, right, yeah.
And then coming back and comparing that to, like, we, like, I don't know, like, people were singing along to it, and the room was packed and disgustingly sweaty. I think everyone was just, like, covered in, like, just drenched in sweat, and it was just, everyone was just sticking it out and having a blast, and it's just so cool to kind of compare those two memories side by side.
Yeah, that's incredible to have, like you said, those varying perspectives. Yeah. There is no one that has ever spoken to you in regards to the band and been like, oh, so you're like obsessed with death, or you're fascinated with death. And, you know, I mean, it's a tale as old as time. Like, so many people have focused on that, their creative expression, through the lens of death, because it's, you know, everybody experiences it, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. For me, at least, this is just, you know, my own personal observation. You know, the band, you guys and the band kind of says the quiet things out loud. And then in turn, I hope that it makes it easier for people to grasp how to communicate about loss. Is that, I guess, like a function of what you guys are doing, or is that like a completely unintended outcome to how you're kind of, you know, framing the stuff that you were doing?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's like a particularly like intentional outcome. Like, I'm happy if it's doing something where people that listen can feel a little bit more comfortable to discuss it and everything. I feel like for me, a lot of the stuff that, like, if I'm writing, like, and singing it and stuff like that, it's kind of like there to help me cope with something, with like some, like, either like literal physical thing or something that's more of like an intrusive thought or something. It's really, really stuff that just helps soothe my mind. I mean, like, a lot, all of our music really, like, is something that helps get some of this, like, fucking weird emotion out of me. You know, it's like something I can't, like, really, like, put into words super well, because it feels like a bunch of different things combined. But I don't know, I feel like it's something that's kind of like cathartic for my depression and anxiety and stuff like that, because it's a lot of stuff that just my mind will fixate on a lot, you know? So putting it in music kind of like allows it some sort of like sense to like get out, or I can examine it under a different lens when it's become something like a little bit more tangible.
Right. Right. And I think, yeah, I think, I mean, in my opinion, it definitely is the unintended outcome, where you guys are simply expressing what it is you feel about, you know, especially death, and articulating that as best as you can. And then people who also either have experienced it or are going to experience it soon are able to have something tangible that they can either, you know, as you have said before, like, literally reach out as they're going through something because of the music you've created. Like, oh, you've put a voice to it, or you've been able to, you know, soothe whatever grief I have been going through. And I'm sure that's just like you said before, just like completely humbling.
Yeah. I mean, it seriously is. I mean, I still to this day am floored with like the reception of like our music. Like, that is, 'cause I'm always like so fucking scared that we're gonna put something out and people are just like, nah, bitch, you guys are flash in the pan, like, this sucks. And like, that is like my ultimate fear all the time.
Sure.
Like, when we were putting out Dimensional Bleed, I was just like terrified that, like, I mean, I knew, like, I liked all the songs, I know we all really like enjoy this record, but I know everyone's gonna be comparing it to the previous one, obviously, because that's kind of what you do. So I was really scared. So when I do get those kinds of messages, it is so, like you said, like, humbling, and it makes me feel valid. It makes me feel like I'm not like a complete hack or something.
Right. Well, yeah. And to your point, like, just the idea of not only the musical iteration of what you have done, but just then the fact that it you're heading into the supposed sophomore slump, where it's like, oh, dude, it's never as good as the first thing they released. And that's just, yeah, you know, that I understand the fear that you were going into it with.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so it's it's amazing that people care, and that always seriously like makes my day when someone takes the time to like reach out and say something nice. Like, I don't know, that is a real like moment of kindness, and I appreciate that it's on when people do that.
Right. Yeah. Cause there's no, I mean, people have to go out of their way in order to, I mean, yes, of course it's as easy as pressing a few buttons on your phone, but like still the fact that they did that, like they didn't, you know, do that for any other band for that particular day. So of course I totally understand.
I mean, I have that moment with like so many musicians too, and I'm just like, ah, they're not gonna read it, so I'm not gonna write it anyway. So
yeah,
like, I
can't punish them. Right.
Yeah, so it is powerful.
Yeah. And this is something I typically don't go into, like songwriting questions, because it's something that I just find that line of questioning pretty boring, and no shots against you at all, but I correct me if I'm wrong, because I either read this somewhere or heard you articulate this in an interview, but you, as you start to, you know, create new songs, you often start with kind of the underbelly of the song in regards to kind of maybe the atmosphere, the mood, the soundscapes that you are, you know, obviously incorporating in with that. And then you start to add like actual instruments on top of that. I presume that it's very, each song probably takes different shapes, but have you ever penned a song like that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, a lot of them do start off with like some sort of like maybe like a drone or something.
Okay.
And because I do a lot of like tape, like cassette tape loops and everything, I like got this like crazy weird like rabbit hole doing that. And so I have like a mailroom box full of cassette loops. It's got to be like 100 something. And basically just creates like this textural kind of like, I don't know, just like ambience. And sometimes it's just like the sound of like rocks crunching and stuff like that. Or like in the beginning of our song Blood Pact, that like little like crinkly noise is a tape loop I made, but it's just of like my like keys that are like jingling in my hand, you know? But when you put it on tape and maybe slow it down a little bit, it sounds completely different. And it just felt like sometimes those small little tiny noises like are the things that like inspire me so much for some reason. Like it like just feels good in my like ears and my brain, and I can kind of like keep building on top of that.
Okay.
So that's usually how a lot of my songwriting stuff starts out, or sometimes it's with like some like electronic elements or like kind of like percussive kind of element. And then I can kind of start adding stuff underneath that and around it. It does change a lot.
Sure.
But for the most part, I feel like that's usually how I kind of go about doing it.
Because I wanted to clarify just based on the idea that there is such an intentionality behind what you guys are doing from that, you know, root soundscape found tape perspective that I think, I mean, I know for myself, like once I discovered like, you know, William Basinski's work or whatever, where it was like, that was like 5 years ago, and like I'm a 42 year old adult, and so it's one of those things like your head cracks open in a whole different way, and I just love the fact that you can have this base of music and add layers on top of it, and I just think that I love why or how that all connects for you from that perspective.
Yeah. Oh man, William Basinski is so freaking good.
Unbelievable.
I literally listened to Disintegration Loops forever.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know, like those really little things that just like I really really like to, I like I really gravitate towards them. Like I have like my own like solo project Zone Bones, and like that is like most of what I do. It's like a lot of just really tiny little like kind of things, and I mean I kind of do whatever with that project because it's just like it's just me, so it's like whatever. But I've always just been really fascinated with just like more like minimal tiny sounds and like little textures. And I have this really cool sampling keyboard. It's like the same one that like Yonsei and Sigur Rós uses.
Okay. Yeah.
Does all these, like you can like sample your voice or just like anything really. As long as it's loud enough for this little like toy microphone to pick up. But there's this one time where I was like holding it and I was just kind of like jingling my like rings like against the sides of this plastic little like toy keyboard, and it started looping that, and I just really started enjoying that, like those tiny little textures, you know. So I wanted to incorporate them in a lot of like my music, and kind of Holy Fawn was just like the guinea pig for all that kind of stuff, you know. So
yeah, another outlet, and I think that also, you know, dovetails nicely into how you were getting into music and all of the disparate styles that you know could allow yourself to listen to, because I know that many people feel like they need to fall in line with, like, you know, I'm a punk or a hardcore kid. Like, as you build your identity, understandably, as you grow up, that's much less important to identify with. But that music can be kind of the bedrock, and then you can take all these things from different places and then incorporate into something that is aggressive.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, and I think that's like why I enjoy listening to like just so many different types of things, you know, because it's just like, you know, like I never know what I'm going to take away from that and what's going to inspire something else, you know, like maybe it's the harmonies in a Beach Boys song, or it's like the textural stuff from, you know, Blank Forms, like tape stuff and piano work and everything. And I don't know, just like, it's so interesting. I feel like I'm just like kind of like a sponge for just stuff that like makes my like ears and my brain feel like it's being like tickled or feel good or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like it's just, I don't know. It's just nice. And like, I never know what I'm going to want to kind of create after that, you know?
Of course. Yeah. It's like, you're trying to find that tickle, and sometimes it's, you know, you can find it in things that are familiar and comfortable. And then other times you're just like, wow, I never thought that listening to, you know, this Kids Bop record would really make me feel this way, but I guess it did. Bad example, but you get it.
Yeah, I was more thinking of like a disgusting fuzz pedal more than Kids Bop. But
yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I mean, they both are essentially the same thing, you know?
Oh.
The last thing I want to hit on was, you guys definitely strike me and have struck me, you know, since you have started to put out music, where you definitely fall in, and I'm sure this has been articulated to you, maybe not in these exact words, but like, you're a band's band, where, you know, members of bands that are, you know, I mean, I'm going to completely put my friend Riley Breckenridge on blast because he loves you guys, and I know you're playing with Rice. Yeah, he's the best dude. But like, you definitely, you know, ingratiate yourselves where bands love what you do, and they're like, oh man, like, we want to take you out on the road and, like, you know, have you play some shows and stuff like that. But the cool thing about you guys is, like, sometimes bands fall into that category that don't necessarily like draw people per se, and no shots against them, but it's just like, they don't have any sort of business upside to, like, you know, prove to the suits that this band needs to be taken on tour or whatever. Have you kind of noticed like people, because I know that you've also expressed, like, you know, Randy from Lamb of God has been like, yo, I love you guys. And I presume that some of that has been reflected back on you based on the opportunities that you have gotten from the band.
Yeah. I mean, it's never not going to be insane to me that, like,
yeah,
people like Riley listen to it. Like it's just mental. And like, Randy is he's like a god in metal, you know? Like, it's just, it's so crazy. But yeah, like, I know what you mean. Like, there's like, I feel like a lot of the people that we talk to are other bands and everything like that, and it's really cool. I think it's a weird line to have to like tiptoe, because I know what you mean when you're like a band's band, and it's like, it's tough to get past that, like, that hurdle, you know? It's almost like we're talking about it in like the group chat the other day. I think someone, like Chris, our manager, is just like, you know, you're kind of like, he's like, you're like, you know, we didn't make it on some like big year end list, but like, dude, like, this album rules, and we're just gonna keep pushing forward. This is awesome. He's like, we are a band's band. And I was like, before you say that, I think we're more than just a band's band. Like,
right.
You know, because it's just like, I'm almost scared to be a band's band, because like, it's amazing. But you know, that same time, it sometimes mean that you're plateaued, you know?
It does. It's a total double-edged sword. I mean, the band that I always, in my mind from an early 2000s era, the band that I always referenced and played shows with, where it was like a band like Code 7, who is like totally unbelievable, put out a record on Equal Vision, like very much overlooked, but they got so many tours because They were great people to tour with. Bands loved watching them, but it was like, it just didn't cross over into the audience really understanding what they were doing because they were far ahead of their time. But exactly what you're talking about, where it's like, you don't want to put the ceiling on it where it's just like, oh yeah, only, you know, old guys who are weathered veterans of playing and touring bands for years will get what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that I'm happy that we can find a middle ground where it's like we can touch on that aspect where it's like there's probably some small nuances that like we'll do on our recordings or our songs and whatever we do live where it's like only people that are pedal nerds or play in bands are going to understand how fucking cool that is.
Right.
But there's also stuff where I think it is a bit more accessible for people that maybe just enjoy that style of music or something. And I mean, we found that like a lot of like the people that we've chatted with, they're like, yo, I really only like ambient post-rock stuff, but I really like whatever you guys are doing. And we find like, you know, metalheads that are just like, yo, I only listen to like deathcore, but I for some reason really like what you guys are doing. So
right. You're the nice middle ground for everybody where it's like, you know, hard pass on anything screaming. And then you're like, okay, well, actually, you know, I can listen to a little screaming. And then, yeah, you're like that. You're pulling everybody to the middle. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's not intentional, but I'm happy that that's what it's doing. Like,
right. Right.
At the end of the day, we're just making some songs that we love and that are important to us. And
yeah,
I'm really happy that there's people out there that have found a way to connect with it too. Like that's at the end of the day, that's like the biggest thing. Like I am so happy that this music can both help me and allow someone else to feel whatever they feel, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Beautifully put. Well, Ryan, thank you very much for letting me punish you for an hour and take you to places you probably haven't gone in a while.
No, you've been wonderful. And thank you so much for having me. I had a blast chatting with you.
Oh boy. What a great conversation, just listening back to it after, you know, because sometimes, well, not sometimes, most of the time, I record these well in advance. And so when I'm editing and I revisit these conversations, I was like, you know what? That was pretty fun. That was very enjoyable. So big shout out to Ryan and big shout out to his PR person extraordinaire. Her name is Monica and she is a great human being. I have to give thanks where thanks is due. Next week, I have I would dare say, internet celebrity, internet favorite person of the hardcore punk kid movement or subgenre, whatever you want to call it. I have a gentleman named Stanley Sievers. He used to play in a band called Dead Icons, and now he's a director, and I hate to use this term, but it is, you know, everybody knows what I'm talking about, a content creator. He undoubtedly has entered your feed in some capacity because he's been doing some absolutely hilarious jokes, videos about hardcore and straight edge and buying merch. And you'll absolutely know what I'm talking about. Obviously if you just Google his name, you'll be able to find those videos, but I was captivated by how specific his videos were, but seemed to receive a lot of traction. Like people who maybe have no context whatsoever for the ridiculous call outs of, you know, very specific either bands or lifestyle choices or whatever. He's able to make it funny enough to where I could show it to my, you know, 10 or 11 year old kid and he's going to laugh at it. So I saw him at a show, had to corner him, and I was like, Stanley, you're Stanley, right? And I just told him, I was like, yo, you need to come on my podcast. And he was like, I would love that. So it worked out perfectly. And that is who is on the show next week, because clearly people who are funny, the only way that they come through the world is through the punk and hardcore scene. Obviously, I'm kidding, but anyways, that's what we got next week. And until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.